Welcome to the Naughty Child Podcast with me, Richard.
And me, Polly.
I'm the dad.
And I'm the daughter.
I did everything before I leave. I need to find that bag of my coins.
Alex Hartley took us off air in Brighton earlier this year.
I'm a huge fan of Pepper.
We thought we were really funny. So
Bobby, I'm doing a podcast, man. Come on.
Well, my dog is now called Jimmy Anderson.
Oh, well, Manchester Originals aren't through to the Eliminators, so I've got to change that
team. Do you cook French food? Like, do you cook frog legs and snails?
I just lock myself in a procedure room.
Sophie Eccleston's the worst. It's like having a child with you when she's on tour.
I don't know whether it shows something about me or whether it just shows I'm a little bit stupid.
Polly, this is our first podcast of 2023.
It is. We had a bit of a break. Well, I say we had a break. It was just a break from the podcast. Everything else kind of continued as normal. But yeah, we're back. You've had your birthday.
I've had my birthday, yeah.
Was it a good day?
It was a great day, yes. Yeah, it was a great day. We went out to Malvern, walked in the hills. It was
lovely. Yeah, it was a nice day.
School term has begun again.
Yeah.
You've had your mock exams?
I finished them though, that's the more important thing.
Yeah, and they've gone all right, haven't they?
Yeah, they've actually gone okay, which kind of buzzing about because slight lack in preparation, but it's all right, it's gone fine. And the next time I'll sit doing an exam, well, I'll have exams in between, but like the next set of exams I'll do will be the real thing. So that's quite a nice thought.
It is. A levels. They might be the last exams you ever sit.
They probably will be, which is a really nice thought.
Hmm. Yes, so time has moved on and cricket's moved on as well.
Yeah, so we've got a couple of things to talk about. There hasn't been tons of cricket. It's more just kind of build up to cricket. I think the first thing to talk about is the women's IPL.
Is it the women's IPL?
Well, the lack of IPL in the women's IPL. The women's like T20 league.
No one seems to know what's going on. So no. I listened to Stumped podcast.
Yeah.
With Ali Mitchell, which is really, really good. I recommend that to everyone, actually. Yeah. It's not quite as good as we are, but obviously. It's pretty good. But it's pretty good. And so none of them knew about what is going on with this at all, whether it's just a kind of holding name that they've given it whilst they work out the branding. I sense there's something going on behind the scenes. It just comes across as a bit of a shambles.
I mean, this is the kind of message we've had for a couple of years, really, with the whole T20 challenge thing, which was in a way a women's IPL, but wasn't a women's IPL, but kind of replaced, like it was fit the gap for that. And then they announced, we're going to have this women's IPL. And now we're like, but it's not an IPL. And so team, like there's bidding processes, all this stuff. Going on, which is a bit strange, but kind of the big thing is about the pay. And I wouldn't use the word scared, but I'm very, very apprehensive about kind of the prospect of they've announced that players could be earning ridiculous sums of money. I don't know, it's a bit
again, it doesn't kind of square up with the shambolicness of the launch.
This is the thing, because if something's that almost disorganized and shambolic, you imagine people would be getting like paid rubbish.
Because you consider the 100 as an example. You know, the build-up to that lasted a long time. Yeah. In fact, then COVID came and it lasted even longer. But it was a huge build-up and planning and everything went into it.
And it was very clear of the organisation through all those steps.
The branding was clear. Mm. It was highly ambitious, you know, to create a new format of cricket and so on. Whereas this has been talked about for years and then seems to have been sort of, I don't know. That
bit of a car crash.
There's no launch. There's no sense of identity around it at all. And I guess I don't follow the IPL particularly, but I think there are 10 teams.
It was 8, and then last year it expanded to 10.
But the women's IPL, or whatever we're going to call it, is not going to be that big.
I think at the moment it's saying 5. I could be wrong on
so
that.
So the branding of the teams is not quite going to be
the
same.
And this is the thing. It's like there were questions. It's like, okay, well, you know, is Chennai going to be Chennai for the women? Or like the Mumbai Indians, is that going to be the same? And there's a lot, and I don't know what the case is with that, because like companies and investors and stuff are bidding for these teams. So in theory, they could just put their branding on it as other team, as has happened to other teams in the men's. But then it's like, it's almost, I'm not saying there's no point if it hasn't got the men's branding, but if you're going to have, if you're going to want to be the big league, you're going to have some sort of identity with branding. But also it's, I suppose for the Indian players as well, they'll have an IPL team that they follow and they might want to play for the women's team. And it's like, well, if that's not there, then it's, I don't know. I think it's harder to build a fan base if, I mean, we've seen this with the women's domestic stuff, that if there's not kind of the men's equivalent, then those fans aren't necessarily going to transfer as easily into the women's side because those identities aren't the same.
Yes, and with the 100, the branding and the identities are absolutely crystal clear.
Yeah.
With the WBBL, similarly, although it's a slightly different competition
time. But,
happening.
But
at
I mean, the teams are the same, the kit's the same, all that sort of thing. Yeah. So, yeah, I think the other thing I wanted to talk about in relation to kind of the more money side of it was, we've spoken about this before, but because women's sport has been held back in most sports for so long, and the men's have a lot more investment and all this sort of thing, the women, kind of the only silver lining really, is that the women can learn from the mistakes of the men and they don't have to follow the model of the men's, and they can go on their own pathway. And I think sometimes women's cricket tries to copy the model of men's, which not, I mean, sometimes it's good. Yeah, sometimes it's a good thing. But I think sometimes you have to look and say, okay, is this the right thing? Is this what we're trying to aim for? Because there's this whole thing about equity versus equality. And it's like, actually, we would rather want equity than equality because we don't want to have the same problems that the men have with their game. And I think the extortionate amounts of pay is probably a similar one to that, because I personally don't think it's a great idea. I think obviously, yeah, like pay people, it's great. But the amounts that, you know, the numbers that are being circulated, I don't think it's a very good idea. And actually, that's something from the men's game that we can take and see, oh, well, we, you know, when people are earning that much, that takes away from the international game and things like that. And actually, do we want that model to be built for women's cricket?
Yes, if you're going to put, let's say, £20 million into women's cricket globally, to give most of it to a handful of the top players.
Yeah, it's not very sustainable and it's just not good.
It's not very strategic either, is it? So actually what you want to do is you want to build up participation around the world, you know, and you look at places like England and Australia, and actually those are the places that don't need that sort of investment.
Exactly.
There are other regions where you want to strengthen the game. And so you can have a proper global tournament down the line with professionalism right across the world, and then build the game up towards events like potentially the Los Angeles Olympics, which could be a sort of big breakthrough. So that would be my thought on it. But of course, once you have money coming into the game, agents get involved, agents represent players, and inevitably players will get paid a lot of money, which doesn't make them better players.
No.
And it's not essentially good for the game as a whole.
No. But yeah, what can you do? We're kind of powerless. But on to talking about the World Cup squad. So some of the teams have announced their squads for the T20 World Cup starting in February. England have announced theirs.
Yes.
There aren't really any shockers, I don't think.
Well,
I think other than possibly Izzy Wong.
Previously, we've spoke about Izzy Wong and how she's gone from making a debut and very quickly being established as a three-format player, first pick, undroppable.
Yeah.
Didn't have a great Commonwealth Games. Has gone to the West Indies and not played, apart from the final game. And has now been dropped from the squad for the World Cup. It feels quite disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, this is a thing when you get a new coach in. So I think actually the timing of it's kind of unlucky, because John Lewis came in around the same time as Izzy Wong had to withdraw from the WBBL because the ECB wanted to rest her, presumably for the West Indies tour. Then it seems that she's got an injury when she was in the West Indies, so hasn't been able to play. So it's almost like, well, John Lewis hasn't had an opportunity to see her properly. So why would he pick her? So on that logic, it makes a lot of sense, because it's like, yeah, well, why would you pick someone that you haven't seen really play? The last time they kind of played international cricket, they didn't perform really well and other people played better. And I suppose the kind of replacement for her has been Kate Cross, who on the other hand has had an exceptional year, has been bowling really well. Obviously, that's been in ODIs and test format, but plays the 100 and plays T20 for Thunder and has tons of experience in what, well, I suppose without Freya Kemp, but I mean, with Alice Cutty, it's still a young side and you've got players that haven't been to a World Cup before and things like that.
But Crossy was in the Commonwealth squad and just carried the drinks.
Yeah, didn't play a game.
And you suspect it's going to be the same in the World Cup as well. And actually, if you're going to have someone carrying the drinks, you'd rather have a good egg like Kate Cross, who's really good with the media, than a sort of young, ambitious, up-and-coming player who's going to be ultimately quite frustrated by it. And if I were Izzy Wong, I would feel really frustrated that, you know, she wasn't allowed to go to the WBBL, you know, which would have been presumably quite a good payday.
And a good opportunity.
Really good experience and opportunity to develop.
Yeah, and to play in Australia in different conditions.
And so that's been taken from her. And then she didn't get picked in the West Indies. And now she's not been picked for the for the World Cup either. So, you know, she's going to start next season with Central Sparks, having not really played for a year.
Yeah, that is a shame. The one inclusion I'm very excited about is Charlie Dean, which, I mean, it was kind of a no-brainer. But obviously, considering she wasn't in the Commonwealth Games squad, it's not, you know, she wasn't necessarily first pick, but John Lewis has kind of seen something really good in her, and she's been picked.
Well, I think we all
have. Everyone has,
we all have, And when you think about it now, it seems a little bit strange that she wasn't in the Commonwealth Games squad. But I think the thing that John Lewis seems to be doing is picking a lot of spinners. So really having a bowling lineup in which you've got two fast bowlers, three spinners, and Nat Siver. And that's the sort of basis that they're going for. And so, again, that's another factor in Izzy Wong not being picked, because they're only going to play two fast bowlers. And Charlie Dean is a really good option. So you've got, you know, Charlie Dean right arm off spin. You've got Sarah Glenn right arm leg spin. And you've got Sophie Eccleston left arm spin. So real good range of options there.
And then they've got part-time spin as well. You think about Heather Knight. Might bowl a few overs. So yeah, they've got a lot of options. But John Lewis's big motto is inspire and entertain, which, to be fair, are qualities I do see with Izzy Wong. So that's quite an interesting one.
And long term, Izzy Wong will be a England player. I mean, there is no doubt about 100%. That. But and I think all young players have to go through this sort of blip.
You can't just kind of walk in and go straight to the top and unless you're Sophie Eccleston and kind of just stay there. Shall we move on to the Under 19 World Cup?
Oh, I'm so excited.
I am so excited. It is 2 days away. And there's been a couple of warm-up games. England have been absolutely incredible, which is so good to see.
I'm going to put this out there now. England are going to win.
Oh, yeah. Well, we said this months ago. Like, England are going to win.
But actually, I think England are in a really strong position to win in a way that maybe we won't be in 4 or 5 years' time, because we've got this crop of young players, and because of where English cricket is at in terms of professionalism, they've all got loads of experience. They've played loads of regional cricket. So you could put a first 11 together who've all played regional cricket. And then a good number of them have played the 100. And so when you think about players like Saran Smail, Liberty Heap, you know, who've not been 100 players, but they've been regional players, you know, they've played alongside Deandra Dotton. You know, they've got that experience. They've played at major test grounds. They've played at major venues. So you put them into the Under-19 World Cup, they're not going to be fazed by it at all. Whereas if you look at Australia, for example, their players do not have that same level of experience at all.
I think it's about four of their players have played WBBL, but I don't think any of them have played in a final. You think about the under 19 World Cup squad for England, they've got two players that won the 100, they've got two players that won the Rachel Hare Flint. It's like, so you've got people that have experience winning who want to win. You've only got, I think there are three players that haven't made their regional debuts yet, but who have all played in the academies. Some of them who have been around the senior squads. And so there is so much experience within that team. And I think one of the massive factors, which I think sets England apart, is the fact that they've been meeting up for months. So everyone knows each other really well. You can tell that people who haven't played together before have bonded really well. They've had those weekends in Loughborough. And then they've gone out to South Africa and they can get straight into training. They don't have to do that kind of team bonding that I know Australia have had to do, because they met up for, I think it was a 2-day camp in Sydney before they flew to South Africa. But most of them had never met each other before. A couple of them maybe played against each other. But, I mean, again, you won't necessarily have conversations with each other. And they have had to do that bonding in South Africa whilst trying to get used to the conditions and playing and things like that. And ultimately, they lost to India in a warm-up game, India being one of their kind of biggest competitors. And so it looks really strong for England, because I know England have played against the West Indies and Indonesia, who are weaker opposition. But at the same time, when they played against Indonesia, they battered on and they were fine. And they, I don't know, I just think England stand a good chance based on the preparation that they've had.
We've got such a quality team, and a team of winners.
Yeah.
In fact, the only person on the team who's not a winner
is Grace Scrivens, who should just be winning everything.
She must be so hungry.
She must really just want to win something. Yeah. No, definitely. So I just think England have such a good chance. And so I've just been so excited seeing everyone there. And I was chatting to you yesterday, actually, about this, about the whole kind of mentoring system they've got going on, which I just think is amazing. So they've got former players, or they've got coaches or different people in cricket to go to South Africa and be paired up with one or two teams and kind of just mentor them for the time out there. And I think not only is that beneficial to teams like England, but you think about how good that is for a team like Indonesia or the UAE, where they just wouldn't have that at all. Like, the senior teams probably haven't had that, because there's just not that investment. And it's really good to see. And it's so exciting that I'm trying to think how many kind of under-19s will be there at the moment. There are is it 16 teams?
That's right.
And all the squads have got about 15 players. Mm-hmm. So many, like, young people just all in one place, getting to hang out with each other, learn about, like, South African culture, get to play cricket, get to chat to each other, so all the captains having breakfast. Just stuff like that is so important for growing the global game and having that many teams involved. I just think it's really important. It's been really, really nice to see.
So well done, the ICC.
Oh, do you know, I'm actually really impressed, because I think the only slight letdown is the fact there weren't scorecards for the warm-up, but that's a very niche complaint, I think, for very few people who actually want to watch them. But no, it's really exciting to see. And yeah, I'm buzzing.
Yeah, me too. So the first game is it
Saturday?
So another week
Saturday
to go.
Saturday, 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Another week? No.
This Saturday?
It's this Saturday.
Is it this Saturday?
The 14th.
No way.
Yeah.
That's
Scotland versus UAE.
Fantastic. So tomorrow, if you're listening when this comes out on Friday,
tomorrow.
It all starts tomorrow. And England's first game's on
it
Sunday.
It's Sunday at 11, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, 11 UK time. So it should be available to watch on the ICC. It should be good.
Come on, girls, bring it home.
Yeah. Got to talk about one more thing before.
Okay.
The cricketer.
The Cricketer, I believe that is like the top cricket magazine in the world.
I heard that too, yeah.
And this week they came cap in hand to you and said, Polly, we really want to publish your article because we read it and we thought it was great.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't quite that phrasing, but yeah, in essence, yeah. Which I don't think my brain's like got... I think we need to talk about the original thing, because... So back in, I think it must have been early November, I just thought, it's like, I'm really excited about this Under-19 World Cup, but I don't actually know who knows about it. And even if people know about it, are they going to know who any of the players are? And I knew we were going to be recording episodes with some of them. some of them I've spoken to before, some of them I know. So I was like, right, I'm going to put an article together profiling kind of all the players, especially the ones that people aren't, like, people that haven't played regional cricket before. So, like, Karis Paveley, Maddie Ward, Ellie Anderson, people like that. And I was like, right, I'm going to do this thing. So kind of over time, I started writing this to include the quotes. And then I published it, like,
well, for, how did you get the information then about people who've never played regional cricket? Where did you, what was your source? I know you're a journalist, you're not going to reveal your sources.
I don't reveal my sources. I had to do a lot of research. I mean, a lot of it was going through people's play crickets. Mm-hmm. That took a lot of hours. Some people I messaged and got information from them just to double check. A lot of watching videos on, like, streams that were filmed on the potato, stuff like that. It was a lot of research, but it was actually quite cool. So yeah, I got all this information together. And then a lot of it, I suppose, we could get from podcasts and stuff. Mm-hmm. Did that and then published it. And then a lot of people were reading it and kind of scared me a little bit. And then, yeah, I got this email from the cricketer saying we'd like to publish it. I was like, oh, cool. Which is mad because that is my first byline. And it happens to be in the world's biggest cricket magazine, which is... That, to be fair, there are not many times I think, oh, I'm really proud of myself. But I was like, that is pretty cool.
I mean, yeah, and it, you know, it's been noticed, hasn't it? You know, so John Etheridge of The Sun sent you a really nice message.
His first byline was in the cricketer,
yeah.
What he said.
Yeah, we got a retweet from Azim Rafiq.
I know.
So loads of, traction.
But you always say that word.
Is that word? Is that a thing?
I really don't think it is because you're the only person that says it. But, like, you come upstairs and, like, a tweet's got 7 likes. Oh, this is getting a lot of traction. I was like, no. It's...
Yeah, I like
that.
It.
I think that word needs to be binned.
Okay.
Yeah. You tell me to bin a lot of words. So I'm going to tell you for once to get rid of a word. Is there anything else? I feel like we're going to miss something really important, but... everything that was on my list. So
I mean, there's been loads of good things around. I read an article today on the BBC website from Georgie.
Yeah.
Hi, Georgie, by the way. Friend of the
out in South Africa, having the time of her life.
I thought it was amazing.
Yeah. So I saw it was actually really embarrassing. I was crying on the bus. I cry a lot on the lovely bus on the way to school. Because I'm normally like reading articles, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I saw this come up. Obviously, it was written by Georgie, and it was about one of our favourite people, Roberta. Mm-hmm. And it was so well written. There's a link on our Instagram, and I've retweeted and stuff. So if you haven't seen it, you can find it from there or go on the BBC website. But yeah, Roberta spoke really openly about, you know, struggling with mental health. And I'm trying to remember the quote at the end, but it was about kind of refinding your love for life and love for cricket again. Mm. I thought it was a really nice quote. But yeah, it's a very nice article.
Yes. Yeah. So I recommend that to everyone.
Yeah. I mean, there have been some really good articles around, especially about Under-19 World Cup. I read one about Catherine Fraser, who's captaining Scotland.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting. But yeah, I've seen all sorts of... There seems to be a lot of hype about this Under-19 World Cup, which is very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be a really good tournament. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, so I suppose we'll try and kind of cover what we can. I might do some match reports, stuff like that. Not this weekend, big football weekend, so can't be doing that, yeah.
Okay.
But do what I can. And mocks are over anyway. I'm free. I've got all this time. But we have a guest.
We do, yes. And she plays for the Blaze.
The Blaze. Well, hasn't played for them yet because no one's played for the Blaze. But yeah, we spoke to Josie Groves, who also is... a very talented netballer. Which, can you just not be good at one sport? Like, why two?
I think I said this before. It does seem very unfair that you're using up talent that the rest of us could be having.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to give a big shout out to Josie's mum, Anita, who put all the scorecards on Twitter and was doing live updates, which was so handy because there was nothing. So that was very helpful. But yeah, it was great to chat to Josie just before Christmas.
Yes, yes, seems a while ago now.
I know, yeah. It's funny because we did the interviews all before Christmas, so they all do feel like a while ago. But here is our chat with Josie Groves.
So So to start, what is your cricket story and how did you first get into cricket?
I suppose I have an older brother and an older sister. So they would be down the cricket club, just sort of playing. And I'd obviously be there with my parents. We have actually quite a good junior setup from where I'm from. So we're at Stony Stratford Cricket Club, which, not to be biased, but I think we probably do have one of the best junior setups around. But there wasn't really a girls section at the time. So I think I joined in with the boys softball, just messing around, playing some games. And then when we got enough girls in, they started setting up a girls section, which was really good. Started softball, then got into hardball. Then we set up a women's section. I was actually too young the first year that we set up a women's section. So I managed to play one game. I was shattered and just had to field, but managed to get in for 1 year early. And then I think I got into county at about 9. So I got in quite early. It was just anyone who trialled was in, and it was brilliant because there was no way I was getting in any other way. And then I actually started out as a batter. So I think after the first year, so the second year, like no one wanted to bat. We were all like, oh, terrified, don't want to do it. I think in the first game, we were like, does anyone want to bat? Oh, go on then, I'll bat. I think I got 26 in the first game, and everyone's like, I've never seen anyone score that many runs. And ended up batting that year, and then started bowling. So batting sort of took a back step and started bowling, started spinning, just went through the pathway. And then the RDCs were around, so trialled for that, didn't get in, but there was some like spin thing. So I think I did a couple sessions, just a couple spinners coming along. And then got picked up into the RDC, which then became the academy. Did a couple years in that before going to the seniors. And yeah, then a couple years in seniors and now under 19s. It's good.
That's brilliant. So who have been the sort of big influences, do you think, on your journey of cricket development?
It's quite a few. Got like the Rob Arnold at Stony. He sort of set up the women's section and did the women's stuff with us there. And then through county, had loads of different coaches through the pathway. But I think Rob Mahoney with the women's section, I was really struggling with like confidence and just not literally being batting and just being like, I just can't face a single ball. I hate it. I really hate it. And he was like, right, let's just go back to basics. I'll just feed you some underarms and we'll just hit them and it'll be fine. So he helped me massively there, just sort of get over the mental blocks and everything. And then Chris Guest at Lightning and now Blaze, working with me for the past however many years, maybe 3 or 4. Yeah, he's been really good.
Yeah, and of course, like, coaches are really important in that capacity. But I think our generation are quite lucky that we've had female role models and female cricketers to look up to. Who were some of the cricketers that you looked up to when you were younger?
Yeah, I watched a fair bit of women's cricket, to be fair. My mum used to make little booklets and we'd go along to the game and get their autographs in our booklets. I think I always really loved Lydia Greenway. Just thought she was a really good fielder. I just loved that about her. I guess Charlotte Edwards is always up there on everyone's list. She actually came to our club when we were younger and did a coaching session with us. She probably had no idea, but it was really cool. And then as I've gotten older, I know she's Australian, but I really like Alyssa Healy. I think just like her sort of fearless batting, just sort of goes out just to whack everything. Who cares? It's kind of attitude. And then obviously like spinners, Sarah Glenn, Alana King, all the leggies that are around at the moment. I think they're obviously quite inspiring as a leg spinner.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you know this. Holly's a bit of a leg spinner as well. And Marie Kelly took her on tour a few weeks ago. They went off to Dubai and Marie was helping Polly with her. In fact, Marie's probably within Blaze has told you all about how amazing Polly is.
My leg spin is absolutely appalling. So I massively admire when I watch people nail leg spin.
How anyone actually lands it on the pitch, I don't know. It's just such a difficult skill. So what are your top tips for Polly? To land it on the pitch, even.
Oh dear. Not really sure. I guess I just bowl and hope, and then see what happens.
Some people are naturally talented, and some people aren't. Yeah, I think that's probably the difference. But anyway, you made your debut for Lightning a couple of years ago. What was that like, you know, stepping up to the senior setup after being in the academy?
Yeah, it was really cool, actually. I'd been in the academy a couple of years and was, like, not at all expecting anything. It was kind of mental. I'd had quite a good year in that academy for the first half of the season. And then I think it was just before the 100. Or maybe just after the 100, they were like, you're going to come up to the seniors, just sort of train with us and be in the environment, like be good for your development and everything. Not at all thinking I was ever going to play. Even on the day of the game, I think the night before I was late to the team meeting in the hotel because I was at school. Went in the morning, got there early, just did a bit of bowling before the actual bowlers came in to warm up for the game. And then finished that, and the coach was like, right, you're going to play. I was like, what? Really? So it was kind of all a bit of a shock. I didn't really know what was happening. But it was a really good experience. Wasn't probably the dream debut that everyone thinks they're going to have. I think it was 7 overs, none for 50-something or something like that. But I think I was bowling against Alice Capsey and Bryony Smith, so always going to be a tough ask. But no, it's been really good couple of years being in the environment, sort of learning from everyone. Yeah, it's been really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's been amazing. So you're saying your home base is at Stony Stratford, and you sort of come through the pathway in Northamptonshire. So how come you've ended up at Lightning? Because is Northamptonshire in the Sunrisers area? Tell me about how that works, because I don't know how that works.
Yes, so at the times there was RDCs, so it wasn't the academies, they were just regional development centres. I think at that time Northants did actually go to Lightning. And then when they split off into the academies, obviously Northants shifted back to Sunrisers. But I was already there. I think on the forms you could say if there was a reason why you'd want to be somewhere else. And I was like, well, I'm already here. It's an hour door to door, like, because I'm Northants, but the way it works, I would either have to travel 2 hours somewhere else for training for Sunrisers or an hour to Loughborough. And it was always like, I've always wanted to go to Loughborough Uni. I was like, it's where I want to be. So I was like, oh, just see if I can stay there. And I was allowed to stay, so that was all good.
Oh, Loughborough Uni. Tell us about that then. Is the UCAS filled in? Is that your plan? Is that where we're heading towards?
Yeah. Application's been sent off. Got some offers through, so... That's the hope.
Brilliant. Loughborough made your list as well.
Yeah, I got an offer from Loughborough, but I'm not going to make the grades.
unrealistic grades, really, Loughborough, isn't it?
Mental. When I got the offer, I was like, oh, surely not.
I was like, it's going to be a lot of hard work, but okay. I thought maybe they would think, wow, excellent athlete, let's let her in. But no, they didn't.
No, they haven't heard. Well, they have heard of you then.
So, of course, Lightning has kind of changed its name and rebranded as the Blaze. A lot will stay the same with your team, but what kind of have been the differences and the changes since last season?
Well, I'm not actually in training too often because I've got school and the under-19 stuff, so I'm only actually in one day a week. But when we're there, I think it's just quite nice. We have, like, our own space and things, so at Loughborough, you'd rock up to training, you'd do your training and you'd leave, whereas now, like, we can sit in the sort of our little team rooms, leave some girls leave their kit there. Just feels more like a base, like it is your home. It's also really cool, obviously, being with Knots. I have a gym session, walk in and all the men are there with the music blasting, them doing their gym work, and I'm just sitting in the corner, like, trying not to let anyone know I'm there. But it's really cool seeing them around. So I think that's really good. And obviously, because we've got our own space, we can do a bit more training and it's more structured and there's more that we're able to do. So that's been really good.
I want to know about netball. What's, I mean, is it not enough to be an international age group cricketer and you've got to be a netballer as well? What's all that about?
Yeah, it's pretty mental, to be fair. It's quite nice having two sports, though, because when one's high, one's low, you've always got something to keep you going. Also worked out quite nice because one's a summer sport, one's a winter sport. So apart from this year where we've obviously got the under-19 stuff going on through the winter, I've never really had problems with clashes or anything like that. But yeah, netball, cricket actually was around before netball. So I was playing cricket maybe 4 or 5 years before I started netball. And then netball actually took off a lot quicker. So I sort of got picked up really quite early. I was quite young. And one of the coaches just sort of identified me. He was like, right, I'm just going to push you. I'm going to drill you and just push you to keep going. So like almost like took me on as a little project. And it paid off. I got in the franchises, Min Saracens Mavericks, and I got in there. I think I trialled when I was 12, and I'm still there now, progressed through all their age groups into the 21s now. But yeah, it's been pretty crazy, but pretty busy, but everyone sort of is like, oh, how'd you do it? And I'm like, don't really know, just sort of happens. But no, it's been really good having the two.
I mean, is there a point at some point down the line where you're going to have to make a difficult decision, do you think? Or is it not a difficult decision at all?
I think there probably will be. I think I'm very reluctant to obviously give up either. I think I'm hoping at some point something comes out about potentially being able to do both if certain contracts allow. But at the moment, I'm not really too sure how feasible it's going to be carrying them both on, but gonna try as long as I can hold on to them.
And within netball, what's kind of the level of professionalism? Because of course with cricket there's now the opportunity to get a contract at regional level. What's that like in netball?
Gonna be honest, I don't really know. I'm not at that level yet, so I'm not sure what there is. I have a couple of friends who have progressed that way because just being like training partners and things, but I'm not really sure what the deal is with their contracts. But that is definitely a hope of mine one day, if I'm able to keep doing both, to progress up. Because I'm currently under 21s, and so the next step would be like a training partner or potentially a full contract. But yeah, I'm not really sure what the professional thing is there. I know that quite a few have to have like a second job. Like, I'm not convinced netball's something you can really, like, you can just be a netballer. But who knows, if you can be netball and cricket, you could do a bit of both.
You think cricket's going to be your second job?
Well, I don't know.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And we spoke a bit about school before. Obviously, how do you fit that in as well? And you mentioned about Loughborough Uni as well. You know, kind of what do you want to study in the future, and how do you see that working alongside the two sports that you already do?
Yeah, when people say like, how do you do school? I'm like, to be honest, I don't. There's a lot of times where I'm like, oh gosh, got a bit of work due in, but haven't done it and everything. I always try and make sure when I'm at work at school, I'm really like trying to bang out my work. Our school is quite good in terms of, when you're at school, you're studying. So I know a lot of people, it's like, oh, I only have to go in for my lessons. Whereas I'm literally like 9 till 3:30, I'm in school and I'm working. But they've also been really, really helpful when I'm having to leave, because I miss quite a bit of school for sport and whatever reasons. They're always really good at catching me up and helping me out and not putting too much pressure on. So I'm currently doing my mocks, because our mocks are supposed to be in January, but I'm away in January. So I'm having to do them this week, and my teacher is just like, oh, don't worry about it. We'll pick it up in February when you're back if needed. Like, it'll be fine, don't worry. So they've taken a lot of pressure off, so they've been really good.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask about that, because my mocks are, I think they finished the day before the Under-19 World Cup starts. And obviously a lot of the girls in the Under-19 team will be in a similar position to you as well, having mocks. Kind of on that note, is it quite nice to be in an environment where everyone's in a very similar position?
Yeah, no, definitely is. I think this is definitely one of the best environments I've been in, where because obviously, like, I haven't really played much with my own age. I've always sort of played up. And when I have played with my own age, it's not been all cricket mad girls who just really love cricket and all have the same passion and everything. So it's been really nice. And then we're all obviously doing school and things, and everyone's attitudes towards that are a bit different, but we all help each other out. I was sat there, we were watching the football the other night, and I was sat there doing my schoolwork and asking our analyst to help me out, and because he does maths, and I was like, please tell me someone does maths because I need help. So we all help each other out, it's all good.
Tell me what it's been like then, because you've been up at Loughborough, haven't you, training with the under-19s every weekend for the last couple of months. Tell me what that's been like.
Yeah, it's been unreal, to be fair. I always think now, like, my weekends are my weekdays, and then my weekdays are my weekends. They're sort of the time I relax and do everything I need to get done, and then the weekends is where it really matters and where I'm having the most fun. It's been really good. The coaching and the staff are all incredible. We always say quite a lot. We talk about how good our staff group is. And then the girls, it's so weird because you obviously come across everyone just throughout the year and playing against each other, but you don't really get to talk to them. And I'm actually quite a shy person. Like, I don't really go out and speak to people very much. So it's been quite nice being in that environment. And obviously we have like school games and things, so you get to know maybe four or five. So it's not like a massive, I'm meeting 19 new people all at once. So I know roughly maybe six or seven, and then everyone else is just really nice. It's been really good. It's a great, great environment to be in. And the cricket is obviously very good standard. But yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to the World Cup starting.
I can imagine the cricket's a very good standard because you've got some seriously good players in that squad, haven't you? I'm interested, who's the big social organisers within that group? I imagine this group comes together and everyone's a little bit, you know, edgy and worried. Who are the big social organisers that get everyone together?
Yeah, we've got a few characters in our team. Obviously, like, we're all from quite far away, so, and the camps are quite full on, so it's more just when you're in the hotel, whose room are you in? Who's knocking down the doors, jumping on beds? So I think we've got some good characters. Maybe say there are some good pairings. I think Davin Letts, Alexis Stonehouse, I think they're quite feisty together. They're good fun. Get on quite well with Soph Smale and Beth and Miles. We have some more contained fun when everyone's jumping around. We're like, right, I need a break. I think Jemima Spence, obviously not going, but it's not holding her back. She's very much in there, making herself a character. But no, it's a good group. Everyone's in there having fun.
It sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine it's kind of like a big school trip sort of thing every weekend. And then obviously when you're in South Africa, that's just going to be a whole new level. Like, I can imagine the plane journey, everything, the hotel. Obviously, when you're in South Africa, you are going to be a bit more focused on the cricket. But at the same time, there's plenty of time for fun and just kind of antics of being on tour.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Dav as well. We're from Birmingham, so she's from our neck of the woods, and I'm really excited about the impact that she could have on this tournament. Being, you know, so significantly younger as well than the other members of the team. You know, she's missing a GCSE marks rather than anything else.
Oh, it's so mental. I don't understand how she does it. I was saying to her, like, it just must be so mental for you. But she's so humble. Like, you would not know. She's just like, well, like, it is what it is. Like, it's nothing special. Like, I'm just a girl playing cricket. I don't get it.
So kind of looking to the future, what are your goals and aspirations within cricket?
Yeah, got some high hopes. Obviously, the 100's really exciting, so I'd love to be involved in that. And then progressing up, getting a contract would be quite nice. And then, like, way off in the future, I think, see if we get to represent England now at under 19 level. But I think everyone would be lying if they said their main goal isn't to one day play for England in the senior team and debut there. So I think that's definitely where I'm hoping to be at some point.
That sounds good. You might have to give up the netball at that point.
Yeah, maybe it might be a bit much.
Josie, thank you for being such a great guest.
Thank you for having me. It's been good fun.
Yes, yes. We want to wish you all the best for 3rd of January, I believe, is yes. the date that you're flying out. Make sure you're there on time and everything.
Yeah.
And I hope that it is an awful lot of fun. And I hope that you're really successful because you need to bring that trophy home.
Yes, that's the hope.
So that was Josie, and she's now in South Africa.
Yeah. So, so exciting. I'm getting a lot of FOMO, to be fair, because I know I don't have the talent to be there, but it's the thing of they're all my age. Mm-hmm. A lot of them would have been sitting their mock exams, all this stuff. And so I'm just like, I couldn't have, but I want to be living that life out in South Africa in 34 degree heat, getting a tan, playing cricket. Oh. Great.
It sounds good, doesn't it? It sounds really, really good. We wish them well.
Mm-hmm. So we'll be back next week.
With another guest.
We've got Rhiannon McDonald-Gale next week, who plays for Southeast Stars, won the 100. So one of those winners who will obviously want to win again.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing how she does in the opening games together with all the other podcast guests we've had and the whole of that team. I think they're going to do really, really, really well.
Yeah, so in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter, which is OO Child Podcast, and on Instagram, which is Naughty Child Podcast.